Welcome back, WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We are positively back in Baltimore County. It is day 30. I was going to shave today for the next governor of Maryland, but I just decided I wanted to look haggard and ugly because 30 days of crab cakes and breweries will do that to you. It's all brought to you by the Maryland Lottery, our friends at Window Nation. I will put the lid on when Coachella comes because it looks like I'm dealing cards when I'm wearing this thing. Mickey will be here a little later on. Pam Wood from the Baltimore Banner. All brought to you by the Restaurant Association of Maryland in conjunction with our friends at Goodwill. Don Moeller is back from Alaska, Kent Island,
Ocean City,
Camden Yards to greet the next governor of Maryland. So Don starts this whole thing this morning, not just put you on the phone with his grandkids and whatever else was going on here, but he begins the day by saying, can you believe we were West right before the plague? Christmas time, the lights were up. We're over at State Fair. State Fair was a new place. Trump was wrecking the country. We had no idea there was going to be a plague. We're talking about Governor Hogan and Robin Hood and all of this. My man, I mean, you have just
it's been a
come
journey.
On, you know? I mean, I don't know what to say, but welcome. Thanks for making time. We are at Costas. We're doing the Maryland Crab Cake Tour. I want to give this to you because Moeller came out of retirement today to kind of hang out with you. I said, I invited Governor Hogan, and Don will tell you, we were at the Boatyard, beautiful place, with Mr. Franyo down in Eastport last year to commemorate the ending of 30 Crab Cakes, 30 Days. I saw the governor at the Preakness. He said he wanted to come out and do the show. His handler said he wasn't doing the show. I saw him a week and a half ago at Mako, and I said, you coming to do the show? And he said to me, I already had a crab cake with you. And I said, I'll just bring Wes to Dundalk is what I'm going to do. So that's what I did. So thank you for coming to make it time. Dude, you're busy.
I was going to miss
and
this.
And Don, you said something like, maybe he and I have touched more areas of the state than anybody over the last 30 years. I've drank more beer than you. I promise you that.
Let's start there, because as I drove in today, I thought, you know, I don't think it's hyperbole at all to say that I'm sitting with two guys that have seen more of the state of Maryland in 30 days than anyone else in the state. And I want you all to do a little travelogue, people log with me.
Well, it's different, dude.
You've
I'm
been around
out the
state.
He's working.
Yeah, right. He said, hey, I want to ask you if this is true, Wes. He did say this. He said, you know, I bet Wes is always working in the car. He probably doesn't even get a chance to look around. But both of you, what have you learned as you travel around the state? Because I think you've been in every county.
Every county.
And in Baltimore City. You've been everywhere, place you've never been. What have you guys learned traveling all over the state?
I mean, I can go. I'll go first.
No, I want you to go first.
Well, first and honestly, it is so good seeing you.
Good seeing you.
This is great.
I can make you a little louder. Go ahead.
Oh yeah. And you know, I tell you, I love this state. I love its diversity. I love how unique a place. There's nothing that you could want to see that you don't have the opportunity to see in the state of Maryland within like an hour of anywhere. I love the fact that you can literally go from beaches and mountains and farmlands and waterlands to urban to rural, suburban, and all of it. But I think one of the things that I've just loved going around the state is how welcoming people are to learn about you, about your ideas, and also how much people appreciate the fact that you are there to listen to them, their ideas, their hopes, their fears, their frustrations. And when you really break it down, there's the bandwidth of what I'm hearing, whether we're talking about, you know, whether we're talking about Dorchester or whether we're talking about Garrett, whether we're talking about Baltimore County, whether we're talking about St. Mary's County, they're all the same types of issues. They're all the same type of challenges, and they're all the same type of hopes for what they're going to see in this next phase, in this next era for the state of Maryland. So I think the thing that I believe in more deeply than ever before is that we are one Maryland. We're one Maryland.
Now, when you say that, and Nestor, you're going to jump in because you've talked to folks. That's what I dig about your tour as well. You really get out and talk to people. When I hear you say we're one Maryland, I can see some folks rolling their eyes and they're going, it's what elected officials say. But I get a sense that that's sort of a driving principle for you, that you really do believe that.
Yeah, I do. And you'll see it where, you know, you'll go into some places that, you know, that people say, well, traditional Democratic elected officials or politicians don't go to, or places where, you know, you'll walk in and you'll see a flag.
I went places I felt like I was the only Democrat. I had no doubt about that.
You would always, you would send me pictures. You would say, oh, dude, I just saw another.
This is the thing I would say, driving 50 and driving along some roads where farmers put 58 Trump signs out, or 58 Cox signs out, or 58 Paroka signs out, or 58 Brandon, or whatever their thing is, I keep thinking to myself, I look at the voting rolls, and I see how few people really, when I'm out at Deep Creek Lake, how few people are there, how few people vote, and how it would be easy for a Democrat to just say, eh, there's not enough people there. I'm more, there's a lot of density of population in Dundalk. The same way that my wife's a fiber company treats these people out in the suburbs. There aren't enough people out there to even run a line to bring broadband out there so that they can like have the internet and have those things. But what I've learned from talking to people and actually milling about Frederick and Salisbury and Cumberland and Ocean City and even Northeast and different places that are, you think those are Republican places, but you see that there's much more of a mix. It's not all red, all blue. Yeah. It's all kind of purple. I don't know that there are a whole lot of places where anybody is all in one direction. Maybe the signs on the road look that way because of land ownership, literally. But I don't think the vote will feel that way. And when I've sat on the set with Democrats and Republicans together in places like Salisbury and at Mako, too. And I saw you at Mako, and I saw Aruna shaking hands with Boyd Rutherford. Yeah, I saw you shaking hands with Governor Hogan, right? So there is this thing in our state that's purple that I don't think you can go too far either way, that you almost have to manage somewhat from the middle. Am I correct in saying that?
I think you're absolutely right. And I think that people appreciate the fact that we're going a lot of places that if you just talk to, you know, if you just talk to the consultants or if you just talk to whatever, they'll tell you, you don't need to be there to win an election. Right, there's no reason for you to go spend time in X, Y, or Z to win this election. And I think people in communities respect the fact that my answer is, I'm not just trying to win an election. I need for Maryland to win the decade. And in order for that to happen, we got to go everywhere. We need to bring everybody on board. And frankly, it's what I learned and what I experienced in the military, where, you know, I'm not new to this. You know, when you look at the communities that we were spending time in, you know, whether it was in Fort Benning or Fort, you know, Leonard Wood or Fort Lewis or whatever, you know, that was at a young age getting exposure to a part of the country and the communities that I had never had exposure to before. And I loved it. I learned. I listened. And when we talk about our agenda, our leave no one behind agenda for the state of Maryland, it's exactly that. That the leave no one behind agenda for the state of Maryland is that everyone will be seen. Everyone will be heard. Everyone will feel like I have a governor who sees me, who hears me. I have a governor who is going to keep me in mind when they're making a decision that is going to impact the entire state. And so that I've seen that, and I think people in our communities have really respected that. With the fact that we're showing up, even when we don't,
Well, you need people to vote for you, dude. Not that many people voted for you in the primary. You need people that have not, don't know your name, don't know your story, the other way, all that stuff. You need them to discover you, and you got, 70 days here, give or take, right, to make this thing happen.
And I want people to vote for me and not vote against something else. You know what I mean?
Like, see, that's a
perception that you've won the election. Like, I'm not going to start calling you. I'm going to call you Wes because he's going to make me call you governor. Like, once you're
on January 18th.
But I think there is a perception of that guy can't win. Even the sitting Republican governor's called him crazy. He's probably going to vote for Reagan again. For all I know, I tried to talk to him today, but I'll digress. But for you, with winning people and just winning your own party and just getting people that may say, I don't vote, or I haven't voted lately, or I don't need to vote, to get out and vote. I mean, and I think that's a bipartisan message that you want everybody voting, but you still have to win people over, man. I talk to people a lot who are skeptical of you because you're not a politician. It's funny, if you were a politician, they'd be skeptical as you are, but you're really not a politician, right? I mean, at all.
And that's right. And I think that we also have to remind people that democracy is not a spectator sport. Right.
Ha ha. Did you teach?
I didn't tee that up, but that happens to be one of our favorites.
See that? You see that?
Did you make that
I pay
up?
Attention. You see the teacher. It's not a spectator sport, right? We can't just simply think, and I think that's one of the things that we are actually watching now, that we are watching basic things that people thought were rights or people thought were
like
givens.
Their uterus for 53% of the population. Just right. Little things like that, that they thought were their own, right?
And you realize that oftentimes in the stroke of a pen, that's not the case anymore, right? And so I think people are, and we have to continue reminding people to engage, that this isn't just about your voice, it's about your vote. And that when we're talking about the things that you're going to have to fight and protect for, it is both about making sure that our democracy is being used as a way of being able to protect basic rights, and it's being a way to make sure that all of our voices are being heard in these conversations.
Well, Wes, you have two school-age children. Yeah. People have heard your story, and you can talk about it again. You were not the best little kid in the world. Mom and grandmom had to sort of take you by the collar and say, no, young man, we're not doing it this way. Kids are going back to school. We're saying, be careful out there driving. Buses are out there. Yeah. Education. People have heard you say, I'm full-throatedly endorsing Blueprint for Progress. 100%. We're going to make it. Again, give people the Four Dummies version of what it is, why it matters, and how a governor needs to play a role.
Yeah, I am so excited about the blueprint. I'm so excited about what this is going to mean for not just the now, but for the future. And basically what the blueprint is, it's asking the question of what does a 21st century education system look like, and how can we get it done in Maryland? And so it was looking at best practices that are taking place, not even just around the country, but best practices from around the world, and saying, what are the pieces and components that need to be in place in order to have a 21st century education? And so they included things like making sure that we could have free pre-K for every child in need, because all the data, and Don knows me, I am data-driven and heart-led, right? I wear my heart on my sleeves, and I acknowledge that. But I'm a data nerd, and data matters to me. And the data could not be more clear. But one of the challenges we have is we're starting kids too late in the educational system, especially when you consider that 80% of brain development will happen in a child by the time that child is 5 years old, right? So when we're having children starting school at five, you are already putting yourself well behind an eight ball for that child to have a proper opportunity to be able to grow and thrive. You know, the blueprint talks about what are we doing to focus on both the retention and the recruitment of educators inside of our classrooms, quality educators inside of our classrooms. And when you look at the amount of high institutions of higher education that we have within the state of Maryland, that should never be a problem for the state of Maryland. But yet right now we are having schools that started yesterday with a shortage of educators and a shortage of bus drivers. So the blueprint really makes sure we're focusing on the pipeline. The blueprint makes sure we're focusing on things like apprenticeship programs and trade programs.
So you're not leaving. I want you to talk about that.
Yeah.
Because so often we get accused in the education world of leaving that subset of young people behind. And here you are putting it front and center. You say, look, vocational training, apprentice programs, that's trade right. programs, that's got to be part of this as well, right?
Got to be. And it's a huge part of it, right? Where, I mean, in my opinion, we swung the pendulum far too swiftly in another direction when we started doing things like evaluating high schools on four-year college acceptance rates. That's not the benchmark for every child. Every child's not going to go on to Towson or Coppin or Loyola or College Park or UMES or wherever. For some children, they want to go on and become a carpenter or an iron worker or work in HVAC or a beautician. And that's fine. Or become an entrepreneur. And that's great. We just want to make sure that no matter what it is they choose to do, that we are providing the pathway in order for them to accomplish that and achieve that. And so the blueprint is talking about making historic investments in apprenticeship programs, trade programs, and also starting earlier. So students can start learning about this stuff as early as ninth grade to figure out what is it they want to do with their lives. And so where the governor comes into this, it's the governor's responsibility to make sure that the blueprint is going to be fully funded. As of right now, the blueprint is fully funded through 2026. And my commitment is that we are going to make sure the blueprint is fully funded. These are best practices that our children and our families deserve. What we also have to do, though, is making sure we have proper implementation. That's also where the governor can help to play a role, where it's in partnership with things like, you know, the AIB, and I tell you, there's a fantastic educator, Dr. Jennifer Lynch, who's also
we know her.
but we have to work in partnership to ensure that the blueprint is properly implemented. But when we do this, Don, this is going to be have a generational impact on our economic growth and on our societal growth.
I hear you, and Nestor says, make sure you have, we got to ask tough questions, right?
Yeah.
Can't be a carnation. One of the things, even from folks who are supportive of public ed, that I will hear and we've all heard is, here's the danger, Don. This is what they'll say to me.
Yep.
We'll be 10, 15 years down the road. We will have spent these billions and nothing will have changed. Yep. How do we hold the AIB, the schools, the school systems accountable so that Governor Westmore,
if we knew the outcome,
right? So how does data-driven Westmore help make sure that happens?
Well, I think, and I love that you said data-driven, because we have to make it clear and transparent about what's working, what's not, and be unafraid to make adjustments as we're seeing the things that need to be, the adjustments that need to be made. We also need to know that the type of success and the type of improvements that we're talking about, that you can have a long-term goal, and we'll have a long-term goal of what it looks like in 5 years, what it looks like in 8 years, what it looks like in 12 years. But we also need to have incremental benchmarks that we're continuing to evaluate ourselves on to say what's working, what's not, how do we adjust to ensure that we're hitting all students and all communities to make sure that those improvements are actually being seen and felt. And so the accountability measure, you know, we have the five pillars. There's five pillars for the blueprint. The fifth pillar, and arguably the most important, is accountability. Is that this is not just about writing a check.
It's not just work.
It's got to work, and it needs to be proven. Show me the data. And I look at the work, you know, for example, before I ran for governor, I ran one of the largest poverty-fighting organizations in this country. And people would often talk about the size that, you know, we were. We allocated over $650 million, worked with over 1,600 organizations.
Through big concerts sometimes.
Through a big concert, through a big party.
I remember the big parties.
Yeah. But, you know, but it was a very large and complex organization. But the thing that people also commented on wasn't just the size of the organization. It was the data around it. Every single investment we made, we could turn around and tell you what was the return, what was the societal return on that investment. And so, for example, during our time, the what we call the benefit to cost, the BC ratio, was 12 to 1. A 12 to 1 return on societal return on every dollar that we invested, because we found the best organizations, we funded those, and we scaled them. Right? Find it, fund it, scale it. That needs to be the same type of thing we're talking about with the blueprint. Identify what's working, making sure that's getting funded, and making sure that it's serving as many students and as many families as humanly possible. But that's going to take accountability, it is going to take data, and it's going to take a governor and an administration that's going to focus on that.
Well, the one thing I would say, hearing, you know, Mr. Education, and of course Dom was my high school guidance counselor and a principal down here at Sparrows Point, amongst other things, and you were obviously this commitment to education. When I hear the education argument being made in the, you know, Twitter sphere, it's like taking Catcher in the Rye off of, you know, off of bookshelves. And, you know, it's those kinds of arguments from the other side that have nothing to do with what you're talking about.
Correct.
But are just social issues that in parts of this country, it's kind of amazing that books that I read, To Kill a Mockingbird, you don't want that. Like, those are the arguments we're having, not funding or whether our children are getting educated and getting jobs, right?
Whether they're getting mathematical skills, whether we're making sure all of our students are getting STEM training, whether making sure that we're actually creating, you know, employment pipelines for all our students and working with the private sector, nonprofit sector, and working with our community colleges and our K-12 system to ensure that we're doing things like PTEC platform so our students are graduating with not just a high school degree but also an associate's degree and a job offer. That you're right. And this becomes something that we have got to ask the state to focus. Do not lose sight of what we're talking about, and do not lose sight of what's at stake in all this.
Well, you played football. You jumped out of airplanes as a paratrooper.
Yes.
I think folks who have known you would say there's a bit of a competitive streak in Westmore. And when you say, I'm going to win, we're going to win, I think is the way you say it. We're going to win the decade. And I've heard you talk about FBI headquarters and others.
Yes.
What does it mean for Maryland to win the decade?
I want Maryland to be the place where entrepreneurs want to come, where innovation lives and grows, where people want to stay. You know, right now, Maryland is ranked as the worst place in America to retire. Literally number 50.
I've had three business partners leave Maryland, including my Super Bowl football head coach, to seek a tax shelter elsewhere because if they die here, the government's going to take millions of dollars that would go to their kids. Yeah. And I hear this again and again from very successful. I mean, I'm blessed to be around people that have that sort of, you know, abundance in their life. But they're not going to lose that abundance here. They're going to move to Florida. They're going to Delaware. Wherever they're going. That's something I've heard a lot the last 10 years. And I think, how can we move ahead when we're losing our best people?
And it's not just our business owners. It's our firefighters. It's our teachers. It's our police officers, like, who will literally finish and retire and be on the first thing smoking to Arizona or Pennsylvania, literally right. just going a few miles over the border.
Right.
Like, that is
well, in Baltimore insane. County, I mean, I'll confirm that. We have a fairly significant percentage of police officers and firefighters who live in Pennsylvania.
There you go.
And what you're saying is it doesn't have to be that way. Now, that gets you to what I think, Nestor, is the real, I'll call it the Democratic dilemma.
Yeah.
And that is, folks have rightfully or wrongfully painted Democrats as sort of this tax and spend party that's fiscally irresponsible. Yeah. So how does Wes Moore govern, move the state forward, win the decade, but do it in a way that doesn't break the bank?
Yeah.
That's the nuts and bolts, isn't it?
That's exactly nuts and bolts. And the first thing I ask people to do is learn our history. You know, I am a former small business owner, right? I worked in finance. I ran an organization where data and the being good fiscal stewards of capital and dispensing properly was our hallmark. So honestly, it's all I've ever known. Being fiscally, you know, fiscally responsible as to how you're allocating capital and making sure that it's being put to the best uses and having the largest societal return is all that I've ever seen. And it's how I plan on governing. I also know that if you look at where Maryland is right now, we actually have a unique opportunity where we have not just a $7+ billion structural surplus in the state of Maryland. You also have billions of dollars that are coming from the federal government. That is earmarked towards everything from transportation infrastructure to, you know, to education supports, about $1.7 billion that's focused on education supports through ARPA.
This money's meant to be transformative, right?
Literally. That was the whole point. Right. Literally, the capital that's come on board now, it's exclusively for making the kinds of investments that are going to have a bigger and an outsized societal return on the investment. And so when people are having questions, you know, saying like, well, what are we going to spend? How are you going to get the capital? We've got a generational opportunity of new capital infuses that's coming into the state that, and much of it, $3.7 billion is discretionary. Right. So we have a unique opportunity to be really thoughtful about this. Now, you are right that Maryland, you know, we have to be able to think through what we have in terms of our, you know, taxes and tax rates. We are going to we have to be able to look at the fact that, for example, Maryland is the only state in this country with both an estate and an inheritance tax. Literally the only state in the country. Right. So there are things that we have to be able to look at.
A Moore administration is not taking off the table that there are some opportunities to provide tax relief to Maryland
absolutely not.
Citizens.
Absolutely. There are real opportunities to be able to look at our tax code that we have here in the state of Maryland and say, when you look at our neighbors, Pennsylvania, Virginia, Delaware, we can't pretend that Maryland's tax code is not one of the reasons why we keep losing people, why we keep losing businesses, why people will choose to go across borders.
Why has it been hard to be honest about that? I mean, you know, in the past, why haven't we addressed that in the past?
Well, I mean, like I've been a public servant for my whole life. I haven't been a politician.
Right on.
So I don't know why data is and you know, the facts around the data is tough or confusing. It's how I've always led. And I think it's important for us to be able to have an honest conversation about what the numbers are continuing to show us about why we're not as competitive as we need to be. And I've always said that, you know, one of the first goals that we have to have as a state over the next decade is we need to be both more competitive and more equitable, and that's not a choice. We have to do both. Now, the thing that I also know, though, is this, is that we have to address issues, for example, like I mentioned about the estate and the inheritance tax. We also have to address the fact, the other reasons why people are choosing to leave. The other reasons why businesses are choosing not to come, because they're not just asking about, tell me about the marginal corporate tax rate. They're also asking questions like, tell me about your schools.
Right.
Tell me about public safety.
Well, you talked about, there are still schools in Baltimore City
yeah.
that opened this week in mid-90s temperatures without air conditioning.
Without air conditioning.
I think your term was, that's unacceptable.
Yes. Yes, and it's inhumane.
What are we waiting for, right? I mean, 1975, we talked about this.
That's right.
I mean, I remember 1982 over here, Stricker had... I'm from Dundalk, right? I grew up down the street.
Hometown.
Says it right here. That's Dundalk.
Right. We're a Costas, by the way. Future Governor Wes Moore, Don Moeller. It's all brought to you by the Maryland Lottery. Our friends at the Restaurant Association reminding you Restaurant Week is September 16th to the 25th. Also, Goodwill. I got my truck. I'm trying to fill it up. And our friends at Window Nation. You buy two, you get two free. I grew up here. Stricker had air conditioning and Hollabird didn't. And I felt like, man,
there you go.
Man, we go roller skating with the kids, and they'd be like, oh, man, we had air conditioning all week.
Right.
I'm like, we sweat our butt off around here. And that was in the 80s. Now, I gave Johnny O a hard time. Don, they've since rebuilt my elementary school.
It was you got to go cut the ribbon, man.
Right? I mean,
Johnny had you over to cut
my
the
high
ribbon.
School that's now a shrine.
Were you one of these people who was like, this wasn't here when I was a student?
Where's the chocolate? I'm looking around. All right, we'll take a break. Wes Moore's here. We're at Costas. He's used the restroom. We need to get some fresh water. We got a lot more to talk about, including this election cycle and everything that's going on. Pam Wood's going to be joining us here from the Baltimore Banner, along with Don. And Mickey Coachella is going to come here to commemorate. He wanted to see. He said to me, you're going to get really fat eating 31 crab cakes, going to 31 breweries in 31 days. So I'm here to say I'm still skinnier and taller than Mickey. So when he gets here, the comedy will begin. I'm Nestor. He's Don. This is Wes for now. They'll have to call him governor, make me call him governor soon. So you always be Wes to me.
I love
we'll
it.
We'll be right
back.
Back
for more Baltimore Positive right after this.